Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hey, I'm Chris Stegner, the co-founder and CEO of Very Big Things.
Chris, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Always exciting to talk to fellow entrepreneurs and thought leaders based here in Fort Lauderdale. It's very rare. We were just talking about it right before we jumped on. Before we talk about the Very Big Things and all the very big things you guys are building, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
So a quick version is I kind of started my career in Seattle. At 13, I started a website that produced a decent amount of money. It was acquired when I was 14. That one was acquired when I was 15 and just kind of rolled along with it. And then it was supposed to get acquired by a huge company and be my retirement. And then the internet bubble burst, but all this was still pretty awesome and amazing for a young kid. Since then, worked as a executive, CTO, et cetera, at a bunch of companies, started a bunch of companies, some successes, some failures, and worked at like a high-end consulting company that was pretty small, getting to work on some of the biggest, coolest projects around. And then I worked as a CTO and partner at a VC fund, where basically the whole idea was we'd write people a check for $3 to $5 million. I'd jump in to make them successful. So successful in whatever it is that they did or whatever they needed. So I'd help them figure out their go-to-market strategy, their monetization strategy, the, hey, here's the right lead investor for this. This is how we're going to talk to them. This is how we're going to get this thing set up properly. This is how we get traction. This is great design. This is the right way to architect this so we can move it forward. Whatever they needed to make it successful, that was my job. And from there, the problem that we'd run into is people would have money and they'd have a great idea and a great founding team, but then they'd have to scale a team quickly. And that's not easy to do. So they'd have the money and they'd spend 6 to 12 months trying to build a great foundational team with that money. And by that time, of course, as a VC, we're looking for them to be in market with a product that's working and testing things out, not trying to build a team to start building the product. And then we started telling them just go to agencies, and we saw a different side of the coin, which is agencies said, hey, we have the team, but they really know nothing for the most part. And when I say for the most part, I say 99% don't really understand the startup world. They don't understand startup tech companies. They're just trying to build you a product. And sometimes they're really good at building a product, but it's the wrong product. And as every entrepreneur, when you find a problem, you try to solve the problem. So we basically started Very Big Things. I started with 6 other partners, 3 from the VC fund, and then 3 from that high-end consulting company that I mentioned. And we started 3 years ago. And during that time, we went from the 7 of us to now we're about 80 of us. And we've set up, we've succeeded at everything we set out to do. You know, we've on the glamorous side, we've won every large trophy you can get. You know, we got like the Webby Award, which is like the Oscar for top technical achievement. We got the UX Design Awards Product of the Year. We got the DigiDays Innovation of the Year. We got like 58 other ones that are all pretty, you know, Fast Company. We just now I can mention, you know, we're honorary for the Innovation by Design, which is pretty awesome. And but on the flip side, the more important part really is the what is it we're here to do, and that's to make startups, and it started with startups, but now we also help enterprise companies, but to make them really successful, not just here's a good product, but how do we make you successful with a team that's ready to go. And on that note, we've had startups that were literally like one founder coming to us with an idea. And now 2.5 years later, they've got 400 employees. They've got $1 billion, you know, valuation for the company. They've raised over 100 million in funding. On the enterprise side, we got enterprise companies that said, hey, we got a cool idea and we want to do this before we go public. And we've kind of helped with that to really get the image awesome and then watch them, you know, go public for billions and billions of dollars. So we're succeeding at making people actually successful, not just building something pretty, but we also build pretty stuff. That's it.
Very exciting. And you sound so humble about some of the things that you've mentioned, especially at the beginning. You know, as a 14-year-old kid, you know, selling your company, that's, you know, I want to learn a little bit more about that, how that really shaped, you know, prepared you for the entrepreneurial journey from there on out. And also being on the VC side, I think that's super exciting in terms of getting that experience to see that side of the equation, because, you know, me as an entrepreneur, serial, just like yourself, you know, I've gone through fundraising routes. I've successfully failed a lot of my startups. And just being on that other side, understanding how the VC world works, to me, that was always fascinating. And how the successful ones really differentiate themselves from the average ones when they provide that value add service beyond capital infusion. So I think that's super interesting. It sounds like you're taking a lot of those lessons learned from that and applying to your day-to-day what you're currently building with the very big things. When we talk about kind of you've been through different industries, different sides of the equations on the entrepreneur and the venture capital side. Tell us a little bit more about some of the trends that you're very excited about these days. What are you most passionate about? What are you researching and tinkering with on nights and weekends?
Yeah, great question. So I get asked this one quite a bit, and I never had a great answer for it.
Well, your guys' name sets the right precedent for that.
And I'll explain. Like, I never had a great answer, and I was a little insecure about that. I'm like, why don't I have a great answer for this? And then over time, I've ended up realizing that it's because, to me, it's never about what that new next cool thing is. It's about constantly improving the things that we all know are important. So rather than, you know, because it's something that we'll have, you know, clients come to us with as well, saying like, hey, what's something new and crazy and cool we can do with this? And we'll say like, let's first and foremost just focus on doing the basics extremely well. Like, what are the things that your end users need more than anything? But through the process of trying to perfect those, that's where we find innovation. That's where the new cool stuff happens. But it's not like I can't say like AI is super cool, sure, you know, or like blockchain, blah, 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 blah. You know, like I could, you know, bring up NFTs and on all sorts of fun things. However, at the end of the day, it's all about what helps their most basic needs to be done better. But what, to your point, what I'm reading about all day long, what gets my rocks off, right, is the whole idea of, if this is your problem and this is a problem that's been attacked for 10 years by 10,000 people and great UX people, great UI people, great product people, great entrepreneurs, marketing, et cetera, have all been working on this problem and they've gotten it to this point that's pretty awesome. Well, how do we get it further? And it's a whole lot easier, I think, just to dive in and do something fun with like a new technology. It's really hard to improve on something that's been improved so much by so many people, but that's exciting because when we do it, we get to see the rest of the world kind of follow suit. And all of a sudden you say, like, we just evolved this process for the entire world. Like, everybody that's good moving forward is going to copy what we did. And that, then every experience that's like a high level experience that people use on a day-to-day basis will have our fingerprints on it. And that's pretty effing cool. And I'm saving you from beeping me. Yeah, that's the best way I can put that, you know?
I think you have a very valid and great explanation when it comes to, you know, just having specific trends and ideas that you're super excited about. It makes perfect sense. And you couldn't have set me up any better for the kind of the further question that I have for you is around innovation, right? A lot of times when people think about innovation, it's a perception. It's got to be grandiose. It's got to be, you know, transformational, very disruptive. But at the end of the day, you know, innovative could be in the form of very small things in terms of, you know, just improvements to your internal processes or how you hire or, you know, the types of folks you surround yourself. So you've mentioned you've grown from just a small group of partners to now a team of 80, I believe you said. Tell us a little bit more about that process, because it's one thing to operate a company as a founder, co-founder, a couple of partners, but when you scale and you now have, you know, many people part of the organization, this is a completely different approach, completely different strategy. And from my past experience, from the angel investing side and being on boards of other startups, I see a lot of founders struggle from that perspective, because it takes a complete mind, you know, shift in how you operate from that standpoint. Share some thoughts around from that perspective, from scalability and how that impacts the innovation.
Yeah, so great question. And let me even reinforce it for your listeners, and the fact of saying that, you know, I have my own advisors, and I went to one advisor, you know, probably a year ago. And I said, here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get from this point to this point, and we're trying to have all these things happen. And he's a super high up advisor, helped take two companies public for like $30+ billion, you know, like serious dude. And everything he came back to was, how are you going to scale the people? How do you scale the culture? How do you scale that part? And I'm like, but aren't you at all worried about us hitting these growth numbers, or us, you know, bringing on these clients? Where are we going to find these new industries and so forth? And he's like, no, like you guys are doing great work. Like the clients will come. I'm not worried about that. You know, the growth will come. But how are you going to handle that? That's going to end up being what makes or breaks you. You know, so I think to your point, it's just such a super important question to ask. And I think every entrepreneur, this is, I guess, why I'm reinforcing it. I think every entrepreneur, no matter how many times they hear it, they still go, yeah. But we'll handle that. Here's the real problem, you know? And it's like, no, the real problem is making sure the culture, making sure the people, making sure you can scale something properly. So I'll just dive into some of the things that I've found to be successful. One of the biggest things that I mentioned to basically everybody is your partners. So I'm a huge believer in trickle down when it comes to company culture and so forth. I think if your leaders and your management are all living the vision and all living the direction you're planning on going and the culture you're trying to build, then that'll find its way down. If you say here's a great vision, a great culture, and then part of your partners or your founding team or your leadership aren't doing that, and they're still getting promoted and so forth, then that's going to ring through to the rest of your team of like, oh, well, that's, they're saying this, but that's what I should actually be doing. So it's, the leadership's so important. And when we go to, anytime any entrepreneur goes to start any company, I kind of have a new hard and fast rule, which is never partner with anybody you haven't worked with before. And I don't mean like, and there's so many places where people try to get around this, I feel, and I tried to get around this in the past. Like, I've been best friends with them for like 12 years. Of course, we're going to get along great. This is going to be amazing. Or like, you know, anything along those lines, there's a bunch of excuses. But if you haven't actually physically worked with them where they're on a salary, getting paid to do a job, you don't know what they're like in the workplace. You don't know what their work personality is like. You don't know if they're the person that's always overachieving or the person that's, hugely ambitious, or if they're just the one that's like, cool, how do I do the least amount and not get in trouble for it, you know? But once you work with somebody, you get to see that side. So that's kind of my hard and fast rule, is only partner with people that you've actually worked with before. Because then you see who they are, and then you could say, is this kind of the culture, do they embody the culture and the vision that I'm looking for with a company? And I did that with Very Big Things. I had worked with everybody before. I knew they were all superstars in their own right. And I think that's made everything pretty, I don't want to say easy, but a lot easier as we've scaled, because everybody is exuding, you know, that those same principles. Other things that I'll mention just quickly is, I mean, principles is a great one. So we set up from the very beginning with of three principles of happy clients, happy team, and exceptional products. Our thought is that's our growth plan. If we just do those things well, there's no better way to become the best in the world and get more demand than any other company in the world. It's proving to work because we've done like no real marketing, no advertising, no none of that stuff. And right now we're turning down about 14 out of every 15 clients that come our way. And you know, I wish we could have scaled things to being 300 people by now, but it's just not that easy, which is why we're talking about this. But keeping with those, you know, just making sure that everybody in the company understands those principles. So that's the other big part is I'm a big believer in only having like three. I don't think you should have like 20 principles. It gets to be a little hard to keep track of them. And it doesn't have the focus that's needed. But if you can get it down to three, then the next most important part, and this took me a while to learn, is making those principles super clear cut, making it so that they're not great aspirational messages to the team, but they're like a guide. And the way it was explained to me that really clicked and helped was when somebody said, it should be a guide for somebody who just got hired. You hired a smart person. They're smart, they're clever, and they can be depended on to be intelligent. However, they've never experienced your culture before, and they've just started. And they should be able to be faced with some very difficult and important decision and look at your principles and be able to make the decision on their own without talking to anybody else. That's how clear-cut they should be. So we've worked on that and really clearly defined what does happy clients mean? What are the action items that a person said the company should be doing that reinforces that? What does a happy team look like? What do exceptional products look like? It's like a checkbox. Have I done this? Is it innovative? Oh, yep, it is. Cool. You know, did it, you know, is it favoring simplicity over, you know, being complex? Check, you know? And I think between those things, having the right people, having the right guides and the right vision have all helped on that front drastically. And then the last thing was another kind of advisor had mentioned to me that stood out was you that initial energy and excitement when you start the company is great for about 2 years, maybe 3 years if you're lucky. But then at some point, that initial excitement of just we're going and doing something cool, new, rebellious, and awesome, and we're going to move the world forward. It gets to be like, okay, yeah, I heard that for the last 3 years, but now what? And so now we're really trying to think of at least every year, you know, what is our 12-month goal? And like our current 12-month goal is to be recognized as the most innovative and excellent at execution agency as far as digital products go. So rather than being the best digital products world in the digital products company in the world, it's let's focus on the innovation and excellence at execution and just own our industry that. And then next year we can work on being the most innovative company in the world. But
I like that. I like that a lot. I think those are very, you know, solid frameworks from a perspective of, you know, you've mentioned an advisor that mentioned something to you, which I have a very similar experience. When I was, you know, building my early startups, one of the, you know, lessons and recommendations that really resonated so well is, as a founder, a CEO, a CTO, you're gonna spend majority of your time recruiting and building, you know, high performing teams. That's gonna be, you know, the core of your role, of your responsibility, which didn't really sit, you know, didn't stick with me for a while until I actually did encounter that when we had to grow, how hard it is, how important that is. Which leads me to the next question I want to talk to you about is strategies to attract the top talent to your teams. You know, obviously that's at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not, because everyone you talk to becomes a potential candidate. Share with us those strategies from that perspective.
Well, that's our secret sauce. No, you don't share your babysitter with other parents, you know? just joking, of course. And I could not agree with you more. So, I mean, on that front, I think there's a certain amount of, once again, kind of walking the talk, right? So it's one thing to say, hey, we're going to change the world. We're going to, you know, evolve things. We're going to put a dent in the world. You're going to be working on exciting stuff. And you're really going to be able to make an impact on it and change lives. And it's an entirely different thing to actually do that. I think when people can see that you're actually doing it, it inspires them. It's something that, you know, I talk with every person that joins our team the first month that they're here. And that's one of the things that I keep hearing from them is why they joined was basically like, hey, I saw you guys were actually doing the things that you said you would. And then the other big part of it, though, to your point, is there's the how to bring them in. And two, I think if they hear our team talking about amazing things, I mean, so many of the awesome people that join our team have joined from a friend saying, hey, you really should work here with us. This has like been life-changing for me. I love it. It'll be life-changing for you too. You're going to love it. You'll thank me later. Come join. And they're not doing that for a perk, you know? You know, it's not like, hey, you get an extra, you know, day off every year if you send to somebody. But the other important thing that I'm sure you end up realizing is retention is just as important as the hiring. And this is something that, especially I think on our third year here, you start to see more and more, which is, you know, you build somebody up for 3 years, and 3 years is kind of the average length that somebody's really at a job. I think you're being pretty successful if you keep people around for at least 3 years. It's kind of the average. But at the same time, it really sucks to like have somebody that's amazing. They get your culture. They've been there long enough. You've invested everything in them. And then to be like, okay, now we lost that person, you know, time to just hire more and keep doing it over and over again. So it's definitely become a big area of focus. I'd even say here in the last few months, we're really starting to say, how can we make sure that we always have something that will keep them excited about what's next? And to me, that's that next 12 month goal, like we were talking about before, you know? Maybe it's making sure that we're always kind of leading the market as far as, you know, making sure to compensate them properly. Maybe it's making sure to always inspire them with something that, you know, makes them better than they thought. You know, I guess never giving them a ceiling of how great they can become is a big part. And so we're trying to reinvest a ton in that stuff. Like to be just, I get in trouble for being too transparent, but you know, we could be a profitable company. Like so many other agencies are very profitable. And we're just going with the mindset of let's not worry about being profitable. Let's reinvest everything we can into just being the best in the world. And I think with any company out there, you should, I'm trying to think of the nicest way to say this, but basically if you're focused on the short term, you're going to be doing the same mediocre stuff forever. You're going to be on a plateau. You're always going to be churning. It's always going to be this kind of lame business. And yeah, you're making some money, but it's never great. If you want to like make huge money, do yourself a favor and stop worrying about money. So I think that's our focus is like, hey, let's not worry about making money right now. Let's reinvest in our team. Let's reinvest in things to improve them, make them better, make them stronger, inspire them, let them know that we love them. And then through doing that, I mean, if we're the best digital products agency in the world, then we can demand any price we ever want for anything when the time comes, you know? So it's better just to focus on being great, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I'm a strong believer that nothing great is ever short term. Everything is long term, whatever it's in personal life, in business, whatever the case may be, you know, short term results. It's usually never as bad as it seems or never as good as it seems. So I think you're spot on with some of the frameworks that you had shared from that perspective. The other side of the equation is the interview process is very challenging. It's a lot of people think they're good at it, but from my experience, even I personally, it's something that I struggle with. It's a continuous learning opportunity for me every time I interview, mainly because I notice, at least from personal experience, a lot of interviews are based on that personal past experience. Mm-hmm. And the interview is, can I tolerate the weaknesses in that particular candidate versus, is this the strength that's missing on our team? You know, I you know, shamelessly stole that from Ben Horowitz's book. So share
shamelessly steal from.
So share with us your thoughts on kind of how you go about interviewing. What's your take on the kind of the interview process?
Yeah, I mean, and to be honest, I'm getting further removed from a lot of the interview process, except for higher up people. But usually I'll get brought in at some point. For me, what I think I can share is some of the things that I've found. And also, I mean, one of my partners, he pulled me aside about 2 years ago, and we're kind of going, this person's got this shortcoming, but they got this good thing, and this one's good. And he goes, it's pretty much a worthless exercise to look at people's shortcomings and figure out how you can fix those. However, a very meaningful one is looking at the things that they do great and then just doubling down on those and figuring out how, because we all have our pros, we all have our cons. Most of us are old dogs, hard to teach new tricks. However, the things that we're great at, we always want to be better at, and that clicked so well, and we've seen it work tremendously well. And that actually kind of leads into the next thing, which is we found this great pairing inside of the company. I think everybody's a T-shaped person, so everybody excels at a lot of things, but then you have one thing that you excel even more at. And what we found is that you have kind of the visionaries that have just this kind of raw talent and creativity and leadership, and they can paint a beautiful vision for everybody. However, those extreme visionaries can be not always as amazingly awesome at execution. And then you have the opposite of that, which is people that are amazing at the execution, making sure the processes happen, making sure everything is needed to scale things at like an extreme quality and consistency, et cetera. And the mindset that goes into being so detail oriented like that usually doesn't lend itself to like free thought and visionary thinking, right? So something that we've found inside of the company is pairing those two. Works extremely well. And we've done this in every department now. So every department, the leads, we have the visionary lead and we've got the execution lead, and they pair together, and it's been a beautiful thing. It's kind of basically what we were talking about earlier. There's pros and cons. We saw this was working in one department, and then we just started saying, well, then let's double down on that. And every time we doubled down, it just kept working better and better inside of the company, to where it's been exceptional. So now, to your point, when we're hiring, when I'm talking to people, usually I say, tell me your life story. And as they're telling me their life story, I start asking questions after questions after questions, digging into weird things that might seem like it makes no sense. Like, well, when you were 12 on that soccer team, why did you always choose this, position, and just dive into those things. But I'm really trying to figure out, are they somebody that's going to just have this raw, amazing, visionary, creative thing that you can't replicate, you can't teach? Or are they on the other side of that, coin? But people that are honestly where you're just kind of like floating around mediocrity is what I try to usually not invest in too much. I'm looking for people that are exceptional one way or the other, and then setting them up for success. But that's kind of the business we're in demands it.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you from that perspective. And at the end of the day, it should be a two-way street. It should be a conversation as part of the actual interview. It's as much an opportunity for candidate to interview you as well and see if are you the type of leader for them to succeed. Do you have genuine interests in, helping them grow from whatever they want to be? And in the process, they will help you with whatever the help you need at that particular moment for that particular role. So that definitely aligns with a lot of things that you're talking about. Quick kind of comment around retention, right? So these days, there's so many opportunities for folks. So all over the world, it's just remote work and virtual opportunities just opens up new doors on a global scale. Becomes challenging for a lot of companies to retain the top talent because some amazing opportunities being thrown at them. I'm sure you see new opportunities every day. I see new opportunities, shiny big things on a daily basis.
Yeah.
It becomes a challenge for companies to create that culture of retention, right? You've mentioned kind of building towards that, at least a 3-year plan. What are your additional thoughts on that? How do you go about succeeding in the space of really retaining the top talent?
I mean, honestly, I think I don't know how much more I have to add on top of kind of what I mentioned before off the top of my head, but I think it comes down to there's the old saying of, I can't remember who it was or who's been misquoted as saying it, but You know, it's build people up so they can go anywhere, but so that they don't want to, you know? And I think there is, it's a challenge inside of us, because you want to keep people and you want to keep them in a position where you get to hold on to them. And it's that short-term versus long-term thinking we were talking about earlier, where when you come at it with that mindset, unfortunately, it gets you the opposite of what you're looking for. In the end, I think you have to just say, what's everything that I can possibly do for this person to make them as successful as humanly possible, to where they could leave us and go anywhere, and keep doing that and keep building them and making them better. And I think when you're genuine with that, that speaks to people more. It's not really worth taking the chance of what's on the other side of the fence for a couple extra bucks, or something that's just kind of temporarily shiny, you know? I mean, it's like any relationship, right? Like if you invest into a relationship, then it should be for life, you know? And so I think that's at least the goal, and can't keep everybody forever. And when people do leave to other places, usually it's for something pretty exciting. And at that point, you're pretty happy for them, you know? And at that point, usually they've served their time more than enough, you know?
Yeah. And if you played part in helping them succeed and grow to that level, I mean, to me, that's success. I've heard my share of, you know, really bad managers, really bad leaders that, you know, which was a great experience. I've learned something, that this is not something that I would ever do, or this is the type of leader I definitely don't want to be, which was great in terms of really kind of formulating that ever evolving leadership mantra almost to help really somebody to get to that next level. That's kind of the biggest takeaway. So that aligns with kind of what you were talking about.
I mean, even to your point too, I have some friends that have, been at this even, you know, longer than I have. And something that I hear as a consistent story is often when those people leave, they're leaving to some executive role, or they're leaving to create their own company or something along those lines. And when you have that type of relationship, once again, long-term thinking, they tend to bring you with them. So all of a sudden I'll talk to people and be like, yeah, you know, Apple's one of our main accounts. It's like, oh, well, how'd that happen? Well, this person, we worked with us for like 7 years. They eventually left to be an executive at Apple. And they said, well, we need to work with this company, you know? So it's one of those things where, you know, not being selfish can be the best way to be selfish.
I like that a lot. That's a great quote. Chris, the last segment of each episode, we do this kind of a heat check, rapid fire questions. I just ask a question and you give an immediate shorter response. Does that sound like a good plan?
I'm not good at short responses, but I'll do my best.
Okay. All right, cool. In terms of your content diet, besides books, what are your sources for learning?
Besides books, that's a tricky one. Because books is one of my main ones. The other one I'd say is I tend to go from one obsession to another obsession. And my content for those usually is honestly just endless rabbit hole Googling and YouTubing and Pinteresting and Instagramming. Basically try to get every tiny little piece of detail I can about whatever my latest obsession is, to where hopefully I'm like, know it better than 99.9% of people in the world.
That's great. Awesome. Thanks for that. You mentioned books. So what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm currently rereading for maybe like the fourth time, the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs. And I tend to go with, I spent a lot of time in my life reading biographies that were CEOs of these huge corporate companies. And I'd say this person doesn't remind me of myself at all. So I just have to change as a human being if I want to be like a good CEO of a company, which I did that practice for a long time, trying to be that person that fit that model. And I think the first time I'd read the Steve Jobs one, it kind of made me go, here's something that doesn't fit that model at all. Instead, like, I feel like has tendencies I can actually relate to. And guess what? They ended up building, like, well, now currently the most successful company in the world. Wasn't at the time, but a successful one. And And so that was hugely impactful for me. So now I try to find biographies that are based on similar personalities of mine rather than trying to adapt me to be a person I'll never be, if that makes sense. And then, so when I recommend everybody, I'd say, I really liked the Elon Musk book that was written on him, just because it really gets you thinking about being able to tangibly change the world and not being afraid from that. You know, there's so many things I think we're taught that's too big of a goal. And then you look at this one guy who's now putting people into space, like regular human beings in space, and changing the entire car industry to be electrically run.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I can do anything. Like, I can do anything. And that's just so powerful of a thought to actually see proven out. And once you see somebody do it, you can repeat it. Sorry, I'm bad at rapid fire. No, that's
great. definitely worthy, great recommendations. Your favorite or the toughest, or maybe kind of the most unusual interview question that you love asking, if you have one?
Yeah, it's like I mentioned earlier. I ask everybody, tell me your life story. I'm not necessarily a tough interviewer, but tell me your life story. I like diving into all the little intricate details.
I love it. I actually use that framework when I'm working with founders for potential investment, where I follow those kind of digital breadcrumbs of that particular founder and try to understand, you know, what did you do when you were, you know, in high school or early days of college? Did you build a club or did you join the club? So a lot of the things kind of, you know, very fascinating for me to be able to build that relationship as a friend and not as a parent.
I couldn't agree more. It's funny. We do the exact same thing with every potential client. Because like I said, we turn down, unfortunately, and I'm not something proud of, like I would love to not be turning them down, but we turn down about 14 out of every 15 clients.
Wow.
So when we're talking with them, it's always beginning with, tell us your life story. We want to hear everything, you know, because to us, it's an investment of our time and energy, you know, and it's the same thing as you investing into a startup. So I love that you asked that question.
That's awesome. I love that. And last but not least, who is your mentor, or who inspires you, someone that you admire, and why is that?
Yeah, you know, so this is another one where I get asked all the time, and I don't have a great answer because I'm not like, here's my mentor. I've got like 50 mentors. Like I said, I obsess over different things. So for any industry, if you ask me a mentor, I could say, oh, this person for this one niche, this person for this niche. But it served me well. So I'd say maybe, hey, everybody look at getting lots and lots of sources of great mentorship.
That's awesome. That works as well. Chris, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Very short and insightful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. What we love doing with all of the podcast guests is to do another follow-up recording in about a year to see where we actually revisit the conversation from a year ago, see how everything have changed, transpired. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
It's exciting. We're going to be the most innovative and excellent at executing digital products agency in the world on that call.
It's on record. So there we go.
you're amazing, by the way. Like I wish I had a podcast so I could interview you on it.
No. Well, I appreciate that. So now I know I have two fans, my mother and you.
You sound like a great woman.
Great. Thanks so much, Chris.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.